Welcome to episode 307 of the Rugby League Republic podcast with your hosts,
Dr. Tish.
In this episode, we discuss referee abuse, Gus Gould's rant, Wayne Bennett's future, and much, much more. Join us as we build a rugby league community for all. The Rugby League Republic podcast starts right now. All right, welcome to episode 307 of the Rugby League Republic podcast, where we aim to bring you the everyday fans' perspective on the greatest game of all, rugby league. This is Rugby League for the People. I'm your co-host, Tish. Oh, sorry, Dr. T. Joining me is Tish. We haven't, do not adjust your sets. We have not switched places. We're just having a good time. So, Tish, how are you going this week?
Well, Dr. T, I just think it's stupid. Everything's stupid. Stupid this, stupid that. I'm channeling Gus Gould here. No, but look, I'm doing well. And, shout out there to little Layla, who's 4 years old and loves the Canberra Raiders. But I think he's being forced by her parents to force the Canberra Raiders, because who could love the Canberra Raiders at 4 years old? I don't know, but a big win by the Raiders. Congratulations to Layla on her team. But Dr. T, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Yeah, there's a lot happening in the world of rugby league. There's a lot of anger, and I think we need to just chill out a little bit. We need to do the Wayne Bennett dance. Did you see the Wayne Bennett dance after the Dolphins won on the weekend? I don't think I've ever seen that man either smile or anything. But he was, look, I don't know what kind of medicine they've given him down at the home, but he was rocking and rolling. He was having a great time. But I think we need to channel Wayne Bennett's spirit, not Gus Gould's or the people who've abused referees this weekend. We just need to not channel them. We need to channel Wayne Bennett's happiness pill, whatever it is. He's enjoying life. He's enjoying life there at the Dolphins, at the Cliff. Having a great time.
Yeah, as you know, Pharrell Williams and happiness, right? I think that's what's got it into Wayne. So So other than that, or we're gonna have to get Jack Nicholson sort of anger management therapy going.
That's right, anger management starring Wayne Bennett and Adam Sandler, whatever it is. Jack Nicholson. All right, look, let's get into it. There's a lot to talk about. So our tackle one is the review of NRL round 9. Here we go. All right, round 9 started off with 42-12 drubbing of the South Sydney Rabbitohs at the hands of Penrith Panthers in front of a very small crowd at Accor Stadium, sub 9,000, which was almost 8,000 actually. It was pretty bad. The Raiders with a massive comeback win, 26-24 over Manly in front of around 10,000 there on Friday at Four Pines Park on Friday. Evening, the Roosters 40-18, an absolute shellacking of the Broncos at Suncorp Stadium in front of 40,000. Really big blockbuster game, blockbuster crowd there too. The Bulldogs 22-14 over the Tigers in front of 17,000 there at Accor Stadium at the Saturday 3 p.m. game, which seems to have been something that has snuck under the radar this year, having the Saturday afternoon games so early there. Melbourne Storm 22-20, a tight one over the Gold Coast Titans at Cbus Super Stadium there. The Dolphins, another tight one, 28-26 over the North Queensland Cowboys. Newcastle Knights 14-8 over the New Zealand Warriors, and finally the Sharks 20-10 over the Dragons in their local derby there. And the Eels get the 2 points for doing nothing. The bye. So look. Lots to talk about before we get to kind of like the game of the round. Obviously, the big talking point has to be the refereeing performance of Casey Badger in the Bulldogs Tigers match. There was a lot to we'll unpack that a little bit later, but in particular the fallout or the repercussions of the kind of online abuse that she received. I think the following match though, Storm and Titans, was also tight and was also refereed by a woman, Belinda Sharp, and that you know, she did quite well in comparison. So part of it must be the I guess a performance issue as well, which we should talk about. We'll talk about next as well. But I guess two other things for me. One was the big Raiders comeback. It looked like they were absolutely gone. I think it was 20-0 at one point, and they ended up winning 26-24. Deserved winners, I think, considering the circumstances. And then finally, my other talking point is you can't go past the Roosters. I mean, you know, they just had a 60 points against the Dragons. Now they put 40 against the Broncos in successive weeks. They're just on a rampage. I don't know what's going on, but they've just completely flicked a switch and have become a try-scoring machine. So the Roosters, I think, are another big kind of, you know, they're under the radar, but they're kind of there in the top eight anyway. But they're certainly making a lot of noise and doing it in style. To me, I think, look, yeah, there's quite a few games of the round. I think, you know, I think the Raiders, you can't go past them.
Yeah.
But the Dolphins, there's something about Wayne Bennett, you know, dancing after the Dolphins kind of, you know, close victory against the Cowboys. It was a good victory, a very high quality match. So I think to me that one was the game of the round. Well done, the Dolphins. They're continuing to progress. And, yeah, what about you, Tish? What were your thoughts about game of the round and any other highlights?
Yeah, look, I think there were a few great games to pick. Like, I think also the Gold Coast Titans and the Storm. I think the Storm were very, you know, lucky to sort of win that game. Like, you know, the Gold Coast gave it their all, and you know, and I think that was a great performance from them. And I think likewise, also, yeah, you got to mention the Dolphins as well. Like, you know, another sort of, you know, they've got so many players out that are their, you know, their mainline players, but yet. You know, they were able to, I think Cody Nikorima sort of starred for that game type thing. So I think yeah, those two were definitely a great game. And then, yeah, look, the Raiders, they've sort of not been able to string along points. I think everybody expected it for Pines Park. Manly, who've been, you know, who have had some really good performances this year but kind of lack a bit of consistency. I don't think anybody expected Raiders, who sort of, you know, have been playing too well the last couple of weeks. I mean, they didn't even score any points against the Sharks recently. But I think you've seen that they've sort of bounced back a little bit or been able to get a win that were really close. I think yeah, it's good. And sometimes, you know, a close win where you're not expected to win, where you, you know, I think that does give you a little bit of momentum going into the next game, and particularly if you could string a few of them together, then you end up sort of doing well. And you know, you think about the Melbourne Storm, for example, they've had 5 wins straight this season, but their differential is only 56, and that's the reason why that is because they end up winning all their games really close. But you could see that also gives them you know, momentum. So the average win is 8.3, but the average loss is only 2. So that's the type of performances you want to be going for. You know, a team like, you know, a team above them, the Sharks, who are on top of the ladder, they've got an average loss of 26, an average win of 19. So that's kind of a big gap between their losing efforts and their winning efforts, right? So I think that's kind of what's needed to have a team that's going to make it to the finals and have a very consistent season. Yeah, and I think obviously the disappointing parts to the round. So Ben Hornby losing his first match as a head coach with the South Sydney Rabbitohs. So, you know, things aren't improving there at a Coors Stadium in front of 80,000 seat stadium holding. Oh, no, wait, is it a Coors Stadium? I might have got that wrong. Oh, no, yeah. It might be. Okay, so regardless of where it was played, it was just kind of, yeah, a bad night for the Rabbitohs. And get this, you know, Ben Hornby's debut match as a player was also against the Penrith Panthers. And Dr. T, do you know what the score was on his debut match as a player?
I'm guessing 60-something to nil or something.
Well, it was actually 42-12, Panthers beating the Dragons.
No way.
Yeah. Why? Yeah. That's amazing. I don't know how that works out, but yeah, first game was against the Panthers. My first game again as a coach was against the Panthers and the same score line that he lost by. So there you go. I don't know what that says.
Yeah. It probably says he's not going to get the coaching gig next year. That's probably what that means.
Yeah. Potentially.
All right.
Potentially, yeah.
Shall we move on to our next tackle where we have a spotlight on referee abuse? All right. So, look, this weekend, obviously, we had a bit of an unfortunate situation where Casey Badger, one of two female referees, refereeing a pretty spiteful and out of control Bulldogs and Tigers match. Some have argued that there were some very poor decisions made by Casey, probably didn't handle the occasion very well. There was some very, I guess there was a lot of disrespect from some of the players towards her, which she handled in the best way she could, but in some argue that she didn't handle it very well. There was a sin binning of David Clemmer for dissent, which is not something you see very often, but he was sin binned for 10 minutes, and then shortly after that there was a bit of a fight. So tensions kind of boiled over, and it's fair to say that as a referee she kind of lost control of the game a little bit there. But also, obviously, the players have the burden, should shoulder the blame as well for their own terrible behaviour. So there's a couple of issues at play here. But then what also happened after, and the other thing, I guess, during the game was that there was, I think there were 7 captain's challenges and 6 of them were overturned. So, some question marks there, I think, about, and fair question marks around Casey's performance. This isn't the first time that she's had a tough time in the NRL, and some people have argued that perhaps she, as others who have poor performances, should, have a bit of a stint in the lower grades, and then once they get their confidence up, come back up again. It's happened before to the best of them. It's happened to those that we consider some of the best referees in the game. So I think there's some legitimate reasons that people are pointing out her performance flaws on the weekend and what she could do, manage, dissenting players better, but also to make sure that she gets a bit more accuracy in terms of the way she adjudicates the game. 6 overturned captain's challenges is not really great against your name if you're a referee. But then the other thing has come up is that some of the abuse that she has received online, as tends to happen when there's poor performances, has kind of traversed into kind of gender territory, where people are, there's been a bit of misogynistic language, and there's been an argument that some of the vitriol has come from, a place of misogyny and gender based. So this is a difficult situation at the moment, because if it wasn't a female referee, we would just be talking about a referee that lost control of the match, and we would be focusing on the key issues, which are the way players carry on quite a bit against referees, and should really, it should be about player behavior as the first thing. But because it's a female referee, it has now become an issue about gender. And that's unfortunate, because I think there's a potential that has confounded the reality of the problem. But you can't deny it. There is an element out there of people that want to, perhaps don't realize that they've got some unconscious biases, and they kind of go on a little bit more than they would have if it was a male referee, potentially. So that's my read of the situation, Tish, that there are a few factors at play, and the one that has really kind of taken all the attention really is the fact that she's a woman. And that's really unfortunate, because I think there are other things that need to be taken into account, more importantly than that, which is just the fact that the players were behaving poorly. We've seen players behave poorly with the best and strongest male referees. And so nothing to do with gender, in my opinion, but I think in this case, we've got a fairly junior and inexperienced referee at this level who just had a poor performance, and that frustrated some of the players. Some of the, you know, you could see some of her decisions were baffling to the players, and I think that led to quite a lot of frustration. So that's the other thing to keep in mind, is that when you know, we want to teach kids and parents in kind of local sports that, you know, not to abuse referees. It's not a good thing, because this is what ends up happening. Some of our players grow up to be NRL players, and then they end up just thinking it's okay to abuse referees rather than show some respect. So, look, a couple of issues there. Tish, what are your thoughts about, you know, what really is at play here and what we should be focusing on as a code to address? Obviously, there's a few things going on, but how would you kind of attack the problem?
Yeah. Well, look, I think for the, like, let's go to the specific incident. It's incidences and symptoms itself. I think the first thing is that, like, Benji Marshall's press conference as the coach, he kind of put it on the players a little bit, which I think is actually good. Like, he did say that, you know, they, you know, senior players in their team, and they expect better from their players, right? So so that sort of indicates that, you know, anything that is something that can be sin bin for, like, he doesn't want to see his players do that, right? And in the NRL law book, you know, there are six main reasons why you can, you know, send a player off for a sin bin. And, you know, number four is dissent, right? And actually, I'll say this, number three is calling off period for a player, right? So she's actually allowed to send off a player for 10 minutes if people are getting frustrated and overheated and everything. And then she can send them off for 10 minutes because, you know, they're losing their cool. The reality is she did it for verbal dissent. I don't think it's come out what's been said. And maybe that's also kind of, you know, we kind of don't know, but I'm imagining that it may not be David Clemmer's shining moment of what he said, right? Because, you know, because it was a heated game. It was sort of still in the balance when it happened. So I think from that point of view, I think she's in her right to do that. I think what made it worse for her was that, you know, she actually sent two players from the one team off in the same incident, which it also involved, you know, Bulldogs players getting in there too. So I think, obviously, me being West Tigers support, it does feel like, well, hang on, you kind of stopped us having the opportunity to try and come back, right, when it's 13-11, and we have two players sent off from our thing, you know. And then, you know, Alex Seyfarth, he was one of the instigators. But I don't think he was the main person on the, you know, in the thing too. So, you know, he's not the one that sort of caused the brawl. Like, he kind of, I think, caused the incident, but not the brawl. So I think that if you're a referee and you do send off two, you know, if it ever gets to 13-11, and you send off two players, like, it's a double 10 minute sin bin for the West Tigers, right? That is always going to bring criticism, you know. But, you know, that's, I suppose, what a referee's life is for, from players. So, like, you know, so from that point of view, I think it's there. But look, I think also, like, people need to have a bit of etiquette in terms of, you know, let's actually focus on the actual incident and the referee's performance. You know, what their gender is, what their background is, what their surname is, whether they were a former player or not. I think all that stuff is on the, you know, it shouldn't really be commented on. But, you know, if we are talking and just addressing the issues itself, then it's fine. Then I think that it's okay. But, yeah, there's got to be a line, and, you know, players can't cross that line. And I think there's got to be a line where fans comments and online comments shouldn't go over. So, look, she's not the first referee this year to have a bad performance, if you thought that she had a bad performance. And, you know, I also think that the performance of a referee is very subjective because, you know, some people, yeah, we all kind of debate a lot of decisions after a game, right? So, you know, if you sort of debate thinking that a lot of the decisions were made were kind of good, then you kind of think the referee had a good game, right? But then you could have equally somebody who thought on the same game, looking at the same incidences, thinking that they got it wrong marginally the whole time. And then you'd say, well, the referee had a poor performance because they got all the close ones wrong. So I think it's very subjective what your definition of whether the referee had a good game or not is. Some people say, well, the referee's blowing out too many penalties, you know, so, you know, stops that game and they blame it on the referee. Well, the referee's only calling what they see, right? If they see a indiscretion, if they say a six again, they have to call it, right? And then you have other ones where they don't blow any penalties and people like saying, you know what, the referees just put their whistle in their pocket. Like, you know, you sort of, so I feel like it's almost like a not, you know, if there's too many penalties, people complain. If there's not enough penalties, people complain. If there's penalties against your team, people complain. So I feel like that is all subjective. And I think that's all what you're going to get from players. From fans. I suppose from the player point of view, they're only going to see things their way. That's the truth too. And I think this year, I think the big issue with the refereeing that I've seen to have is that I feel like in some areas they're very nitpicky and in other areas they're very loose. Like, I think that we've had a couple of incidences that were sin binned and then a similar sort of incident would happen in another game and it's not sin binned, for example. Like, you know, so I think things like that, they've got this weird thing about the people jumping in the air and, is that a cynical challenge going for the ball or was that a legitimate challenge? And I'm like, well, how do you know the difference, you know? And they, you know, blockers in the air and the whole obstruction, you know, sort of, you know, confusion. So there's a lot of things like that aren't very black and white, unfortunately, which, you know, I just feel like it's, and I think this year it's kind of erred on the side of giving the penalty as opposed to not giving the penalty in most cases. And I think that just slows the game down a bit too much. And I think that just, I think that's probably where the one thing I'd say is that I think this year it's just been a little more, overall it's been a little more, a bit too stop start. So I've just got to see how that sort of works. Yeah, there's a couple of interesting things as well that I noticed as well. Like, I'm kind of a bit confused when they call it six again as opposed to giving it to a penalty because I feel like, you know, if you're attacking close to your opposition's line, shouldn't these, penalties that you're giving, shouldn't they be six agains? But for some teams, they call it a six again, but for other teams, they call it a penalty. So just, yeah, that lack of consistency is kind of where I think where the main frustration is. But if you're frustrated or not frustrated, no excuse for verbally abusing somebody about gender, race, you know, experience, none of that. Like, because it's just not what our game is about. It's about inclusiveness, right?
Absolutely. If I could just take up the point that you made earlier just around let me summarize one of the points that I wanted to make earlier as well around the fact that there was ultimately it's the players that are making, like, she's not inventing penalties. If anything, all a referee can do is let things go. They can't necessarily, like, when people say, oh, this referee is nitpicking, well, that's because the players aren't doing things properly. I mean, you could nitpick almost every tackle and every play the ball as not having played the ball properly. But I think the ship has sailed on that and almost no referee blows up anything. We seem to be playing tunnel ball, rolling the ball between our legs rather than properly playing the ball. If you really wanted to, we should have a really big campaign to try and get everyone to bloody play the ball properly, like they were supposed to be taught when they were younger. But anyway, that's an aside. And so really the most you can level at a referee is, you know, you're too nitpicky. Like they're not inventing, you know, it's like the penalty is there to be given if there's an indiscretion of some sort. But it's not just that, it's also just around things like, not reading properly what happened, you know, a ball gets stripped out in a play the ball as players are struggling to stand up, and then it's called knock on, and then the player gets frustrated because it's like, you know, but I didn't knock it on. That player ripped it out. And then they go to the bunker. And the bunker's another problem as well that adds to it, because sometimes the bunker doesn't necessarily make the best decision either. But when you've got that many overturned captain's challenges in a game, it does call into question how good of a referee are we talking about, and how good is his or her performance. On the point about that potentially being connected to, you know, correlation isn't causation necessarily, but if, sometimes when you talk about patterns of things and how they're connected to the level of dissent and general contempt that some players hold referees in, and the way that that disrespect turns into games that go out of control, frustrations boil over, etc. I'm just reminded of, I think it wasn't last year, it was the year before, I think, in one of the semi-final games where South Sydney played the Rabbitohs.
Oh, yeah.
And it was one of the worst, probably, refereed games you'll ever see. I think it was refereed by Ashley Klein, who ended up being promoted as a grand final referee, if I'm not mistaken, potentially.
Yeah.
So there is precedent for, you know, other referees in the past having completely lost control of a game. Admittedly, a semi-final, a knockout final would have been, you know, higher stakes than a you know, middle to bottom of the table Bulldogs v Tigers match early in the season. Completely different context, but regardless, I think it's not unusual for there to have been referees that are currently considered some of the best in the game, whether we agree or not, that have also completely lost control of a situation and, you know, had a shocker, basically. You know, and I guess I think the question is, what is the reaction at that point? Does the NRL and do the referee's boss give that referee a stint on the sidelines? Or in some cases, if they consider one of the top referees, do they let them continue and actually promote them to be the grand final referee the following week or 2 weeks later, which is what happened with Ashley Klein, unbelievably, you know? And so that's a situation here. And I think, like I said, the unfortunate thing is we should be talking about things like the way players generally behave towards referees. And I'll just come back to that very briefly in a minute as my final point. But instead, we're sort of talking about gender. We're talking about keyboard warriors hurling abuse at referees, which is really, you know, let's not forget the social media and the internet is like a megaphone compared to the idiots that you'd hear on park football going, oh, you know, referee abusing referees, and everyone else just saying shut up. You know, you can't do that when you got the megaphone of the internet. It's not as easy to tell 1,000 people to shut up when they all say the same thing and they post all over the place. So that's one thing that we need to address as well, is the angle of the keyboard warrior aspect, and the fact some people get false courage that they decide to sort of just hurl negativity out there into the world. So I guess the final point was really what was my final point? I forgot what I was going to say. Maybe it wasn't that good a point. So there you go. I think, look, it's we need to do something to focus on player behavior, really. That to me is the key thing. One of the things we need to do is look at how, and maybe we just need a big campaign for players to just really talk to the referee respectfully. Say what you will, and I've said plenty about Cam Smith in the past, but the way he handled referees, the way he spoke to them respectfully, he almost never acted like a sport brat, you know, chucking a tantrum and getting angry. You never saw him do that. And yeah. I think what we need is definitely starting from the captains across the board, need to be taught to do this a little bit more and you know, not necessarily because it's a way to manipulate the emotions of referees or whatever. But, you know, as a basic standard, if everyone talked to referees like Cam Smith did, and certainly how they do in kind of rugby union circles, then I think that would be fair, and I think that would be good to see. And that, to me, is one of the real ways to get around this situation. So that's what I think needs to happen. Yes, have the conversation about gendered kind of, not violence, but gendered kind of misogyny and things like that. That's probably part of the conversation here for sure. But I don't think it's the biggest part of the conversation. I think what we need to do is focus on the player behavior aspect is something that needs to be resolved. And if the players behave like that, I think fans would start to behave accordingly as well. I think the reason why some fans go off as well is that they see their captains being really angry and abusive and not, you know, you know, there are ways to make your point if you're frustrated that you're not getting the rub of the green. The way to do it is to be more respectful, not necessarily to yell at the referee, certainly not to the point where you're a seasoned professional and you get sent off for dissent in this day and age with 10 minutes to go, whatever it is. That to me is unacceptable. And I think, you know, there needs to be a greater conversation around that. So that to me is my solution. But we're going to talk about someone else who is always going off on a rant. Gus Gould is in the news. Tackle number three. We're going to talk about Gus Gould's rant. Here we go. All right. Gus Gould, Phil Gould, those of you who don't know much, you know, considered one of the greatest coaches in the game, certainly the greatest New South Wales Blues coach. And he's a commentator. He's also football supremo there at the Bulldogs, pulling the strings and whatnot, you know, has built quite a quality side, which we're going to talk about later with the Bulldogs in our rolling report card. But he, an incident that happened this week has certainly brought into question a couple of things in terms of conflicts of interest in the game and what that means for, you know, truth-telling, really. Gould is not known for holding back on his opinion. He often says to the detriment, I think, of his reputation, what is on his mind. The quote, well, one of the quotes that kind of got him in trouble this week was when he was commentating again in the Bulldogs-Tigers match, or at least following following that. I think, where was he? Was he on a podcast or something? Or
no, he was on 100% footy. So he was on live on national television.
Live on national television. And one of the quotes where he said, "What the hell was that?" He was talking about a particular bunker decision. "What the hell was that? We are so stupid with our rules. Our game is stupid." that was one of the funny quotes. You did refer to this earlier about our stupid game. But, you know, he has a right to an opinion. And I think a lot of people would argue that, you know, if he was just a commentator, it wouldn't matter. But he's an employee of a club in the NRL.
Yeah.
So, and he's a pretty high. And so this is the conflict I was talking about. He's not just any old Gus Gould where he had no affiliations with any club. He has an affiliation with the Bulldogs. And he was talking about a Bulldogs game and decision. No,
this actually happened the week before. So
You're right.
He was talking about a Tigers
decision that went against them. But the point was that he still made a comment against the NRL administrators and how stupid the game has become and the rules, et cetera, et cetera. So even though he could argue, you know, legally he didn't sort of defame really anyone, he's just talking generally about our game, it's pretty clear that he's talking about the fact that the decision makers, the administrators have overburdened, you know, by making recent decisions in recent years around interpretations of certain rules, have turned the game into a bit of a joke. That's his point. And I think most people would, in fact, almost everyone I've seen online completely agrees with his point. That hasn't stopped the NRL. Now, I don't know what's happened. Have they fined him or they're thinking of fining him? So he's been punished for expressing an opinion which is extremely strong against the administrators of the game, even if it wasn't indirectly. Certainly the quotes that have been bandied about, from what I've seen, it's pretty clear who the target is. So I guess the question becomes, apart from the fact that he is an employee and the NRL has a right to, punish him because he's kind of, he's not employee of them, of the NRL Central, NRL Central, but he is an employee of one of the clubs. I think that's like, when you see Ricky and Des Hasler bringing the game into disrepute, that kind of thing. So there's a question there around, is the NRL right to sort of be touchy about this or what? What are your thoughts on this? There's quite a lot going on here, Tish.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, it's a difficult one. We're just talking about player dissent. Now we're talking about general manager dissent, right? A little bit like, and then I think that's the conflict of him being a commentator, a voice of rugby league, the main voice on sort of the main channels there. But then at the same time, he is also a general manager for one of the teams. So, it kind of makes it difficult. So I think sometimes you just got to say you got to be careful what you got to say. Look, I remember, I think the comment was made, last week, and I think on SEN Morning Radio, I think Andrew Voss, who doesn't work for Channel 9, works for a different, the other set of commentators on Fox, he actually decided to start a GoFundMe page to pay the fine. And then getting like callers who agree with Gus on what he said and, how the rules around, and I think the rules that he was sort of referring to were the rules around, if the ball is sort of, over the try line, you just need to touch it. But if you carry the ball over the line and you try to put it down, you have to have downward pressure, right? Or you have to have complete control of it. And then that interpretation is, how much control do you need? Like, do you need the control of a fingernail or do you need the whole hand? Like, that kind of stuff, it keeps changing. And I think that also the changes that they've made with the, the dropouts, how there used to be a penalty, now there's no penalty. So it's kind of taken some of the excitement out of it a little bit. That type of thing, and the seven tackle set. So there's a couple of things like that, which I think where I do agree with Gus that they've over overcomplicated it for not for the best reason, and I think it's actually brought the game down a little bit. I suppose the challenge is him as a general manager. Can he say it in public? A and B, the way he said it, does it. Is it a good way to actually talk about it? Like, just talking about it all angry and frustrated and just calling the whole thing stupid rather than actually debating it. And I think that's probably where the issue is. It's probably not the actual opinion that he had. I think it's okay to have that opinion because he's not wrong. I think that's his argument. I'm not wrong. That it is stupid, right? Which is true. They probably are silly rules, silly changes that weren't necessarily to happen. I think he's on the money there a little bit, but I just think the way he communicated it, not the best way. just full of emotion and full of full of sort of figure. And I think this is the other thing that's happened with Phil Gould too. Like, as I think earlier in that show, there was something where I think he was talking about a player not want stepping down from origin duties, right? And then he was talking about, if he's not going to put his name there, then he shouldn't be eligible ever, like just saying stuff like that. Headspace that got players in. And then I think one of the other people said, well, Gus, he's actually not said it. It's just he's rumored to have said it, but nobody's got a statement from him to say that he said it. And then he went, oh, well, I must offer an apology. Can we shoot that again? I think somebody else went, Gus, this is live. Right, so I also feel like Phil Gould kind of loses his bearings on the show a little bit, right?
Yeah,
it was just so. I think the way they maybe produced the show, they could, I don't think they should go live on this stuff, right? Because I mean, like, do we really because it kind of brings Channel 9 down a little bit too, right? So I don't know if the situation, he got himself in a bad situation, is probably what we'd say. Yeah, so no rants on shows that are live. I think that's like your media training right there, right?
Just think before you speak, Gus. I think is the lesson there.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, there you go. And then maybe that do you think that contributes to player descent too? If you see officials and heads of clubs do the same thing.
For sure. I think that's. I guess that's my point. Is that and the same with players, youngsters as well. And then the cycle continues. You know, people think it's acceptable to talk like that to referees, to be that, open and negative about things, as opposed to thinking before you speak, that kind of thing. If that becomes what's the term? I guess it becomes kind of a acceptable behavior, and if it's visible, especially, it just continues, right? I mean, the role models do it, then everyone else does it. I think that's definitely part of it, and I think that's why I think when people get to a certain level, they've got to really think carefully about what they say and the consequences of those opinions and the way they say it. Look, Gus has always been someone who has been a great analyst of the game, but he's also been quite a passionate kind of supporter of finding, you know, of his truth and definitely a passionate supporter of his teams as well. So I think there's an element there of, you know, how much of the comments are self-serving and how much of them are genuinely trying to find a solution to things, or is it just whinging? And in which case, people don't necessarily gravitate towards a whinger. They kind of want to see some solution. So what is the solution? Okay, the rules are stupid, or okay, we've overcomplicated things. You know, you gave really great specific examples there about the interpretation of what happens when you go over trial line. Well, what's the solution then? You know, let's talk solutions. I think that's a better thing, rather a better focus, because I think Gaskell does have solutions. I think what happens is some of his solutions, he needs to kind of bring them out in a more positive way. So I think part of it is it's not the message that's wrong. It's the way the message was, you know, packaged delivered, up.
Yeah.
And part of it may also be the deliverer of the message, the messenger. I think people really don't. There's a lot of people that just hate Gus Gould and that I think fuels then his own anger. And then that kind of turns into, oh, here we go, Gus with another rant again. Whereas, you know, if he had just been a bit more measured in his criticism and specific, then we wouldn't have had this whole, you know, are you serious? Like, there's a GoFundMe to pay for his, like, what? I think that, to me, that is stupid. The fact that this has... snowballed into a situation where, like, what was the origin of this situation? It was some legitimate concerns about our interpretation of rules here and there. Okay, let's talk about that. Let's be intelligent about it. And for someone who is actually, I think, one of the most intelligent analysts in the game's ever seen, for him to let the emotion get the better of him, whether he's genuine about it, whether it's a genuine kind of anger thing, or whether he does it to kind of, you know, because they know that he's a bit of a show horse and can sort of gets the ratings if you've got a bit of a Gus Gould rant going. I don't know. Maybe he overstepped the boundary there. Maybe, you know, whatever the case may be, I think let's get back to what the issue is and let's try and solve things. So that is also my way of segueing into someone who is renowned as being one of the most stoic characters of the game, which is Wayne Bennett. So we're going to talk about Wayne Bennett's future here in tackle number 4. Here we go. So Wayne Bennett, you know, from someone who's very emotionally driven to someone who is one of the most, like I said, stoic characters ever in the game, Wayne Bennett hardly cracks a smile. We saw him, you know, in the midst of all this coaching merry-go-round situation. He has been speculated as the next South Sydney coach. He has been speculated as someone that Parramatta will look into to replace Brad Arthur next year, even though they haven't sacked him yet or nothing's happened. So he's got two clubs that are pretty genuine contenders for his signature next year as coach. Let's not forget he's like 74 years old, so he's going pretty well for someone his age. And in the midst of all that, despite all that, he has managed to keep the Dolphins rolling along. They are officially fourth on the ladder, clear fourth, with only the Sharks, Storm and Panthers ahead of them. And, you know, he's done pretty well to kind of get them to that point where, you know, 5 wins, 3 losses, not too bad. Not great, but not too bad. And I think we've already done a bit of a report card of them earlier this year. And despite all that, he's managed to, you know, as we mentioned earlier, there's great footage of him in the Dolphins dressing room over their tight win over their interstate or intrastate rivals, the Cowboys, dancing and hooping and hollering along with the rest of the players, which was absolutely great to see. It's great to see any coach doing that, but for someone his age and of his level of stature and reputation as being really like stoic and emotionless and that's the way he does things, for him to kind of let loose is are we seeing a different Wayne Bennett? I don't know, but I guess the question here is about, you know, well, definitely he's not moving mid-season. I think it's pretty clear he's going to see out the season regardless, but we have the Rabbitohs, we have the Eels vying for his signature. We don't know if there's someone else coming from the clouds. There's a possibility none of that will matter. There's a possibility that he will stay at the Dolphins, even though I think the agreement was that he would make way for who is the assistant coach? I forget who it is. But, yeah, so there is a bit of an understanding that he was going to make way for someone else. And, you know, as a succession plan, but it sounds like he still wants to be in the NRL at the top level. So, you know, it's possible he'll come back to the Rabbitohs. It's probable that he'll go to the Eels, or possible, sorry, that he'll go to the Eels as well. No, I shouldn't say probable. I don't know that for sure. It's all possible. We don't know what's going to happen. So that's the question, Tish. If you were, you know, king for a day and were able to, or you know, Wayne Bennett's manager, give or take, which one would you advise him to go for?
Yeah, well, I don't think he's going to pick either of them because I feel like the rumors that he doesn't want to leave Queensland seem to be fresh, you know, so I don't think that it's a chance, but I think out of the two, well, I feel like the Rabbitohs are a long way off from winning a premiership, but I think they need a long-term rebuild strategy a little bit, because you can see that, like, they do have dissent in the dressing room, but they do have young juniors coming through, and it's still a club that people want to play for. So I think if they could get that sort of, you know, younger crop to come in and balance it out with their senior players, that is kind of where they're going to go well. And I don't know if that's a Wayne Bennett task. So I kind of feel that Parramatta, though, they're kind of, I don't know why they're not in the premiership window that they are. Like, they've kind of, you know, I know they've lost a few players, but I don't think it's as drastic as some of, like, say, what Penrith have lost, for example. So I feel like he would do really well in the current situation that Parramatta are in, where, you know, where they've got a group of players that have played well together for a long period of time, but are just not being able to crack it and go to the next level, right? And then, you know, maybe it's to do with the player management and a bit on how they sort of see themselves and the confidence, you know. I mean, who can forget, like, you know, how well he sort of revived Benji Marshall's career by taking him under his wing, right? So I feel like there are some players at Parramatta that might go up a level with Wayne there, whereas I think with the Rabbitohs, I don't think it's actually the players at the level they're playing for, but it's more like the way you mix the team and mix the roster up, which I don't think is Wayne's MO, considering how many Dolphins players are injured at the moment, right? I don't think that shows really good roster management right there when depth becomes an issue. Yeah, so I actually think out of the two, I think Parramatta would benefit better. And I think that would be more the challenge that he's more likely to be successful in if he was to move. But I just don't see him leaving Queensland now. What about your thoughts, Dr. T?
Yeah, I mean, look, you make some pretty good points. I should probably mention that the one of the assistant coaches that he will step aside for, if he does so, the Dolphins, is Christian Wolf, who is obviously a well-renowned coach, has won some things over there in England, but also was, and I think still is, the coach of Tonga, the Tongan national team. So having said that, I think there is, like I said, South Sydney, the context there makes me think that potentially that they have the front running compared to any other team. He might want to go back there and finish off what he started. He didn't really have, the success there that they wanted him to have. But I think my argument is, I think if the Eels want him, they will get him. I think all they have to do, I don't know if they want him yet. I think that's the problem. I don't know if they want to change coach, and that is a bigger problem, because if they decide they do, all they have to do is go to Wayne Bennett, show him around Bankwest Stadium, give him the VIP treatment, the VIP tour, take him out to some of the eateries around Parramatta, show him the ropes. And stick on a video of the 80s grand finals and show him what Parramatta fans like myself are really desperate to go back to in terms of the winning culture, and how we need someone like him to bring us to the promised land again.
And, this sounds like a tour of a nursing home.
It does, doesn't it? It's like visiting hours are 3 to 8 p.m. But in all fairness, I think my argument is there's a strong case to be made for both South and the Dolphins. And like I said, I don't know if there's another one coming from the clouds, but I think the Eels have an opportunity to sort of say, Wayne, it's all about, at your age, it's about making sure that, your body is functioning okay, having your regular health checkups, but also it's about legacy. And while you could go and try and fix a legacy in South Sydney, you've already done, you've already proven you can win premierships outside of the Broncos. That is already ticked off. You don't need to worry about that. Wouldn't it be better? And going back to South, South's only just won 10 years ago, their first one in like 46 years or something. The other team that is has a very long drought between premierships is the Eels. And the Eels are really an they're an underdog in Sydney. They're the sleeping dragon, whatever they call it, sleeping lion. I don't know what the right terminology is. They're a dark horse, and they're a hibernating bear. What we need is to wake up the crowd. We need someone who can bring us to the promised land, and really is about legacy. And it's like, if he's able to be successful at the Eels, the GOAT is already, the GOAT trophy is already being shaped in the form of Wayne Bennett. He will be an absolute greatest of all time coach if he's able to bring a premiership to the Eels, considering what an absolute shambles they are at the moment. So I think, if you want to lure him in as a via the legacy angle, imagine what your legacy will be if you can bring the Eels their first premiership in 40 years or whatever. I think that's a very, very strong, carrot really for him. So that would be my argument. Whether he actually chooses it, I don't know. I think it all boils down to, do the Eels actually want to put in the effort to get into the market for him? Because if they do, I think they're immediately the front runners on the basis of what I just said. If they do not, if they show stubbornness and retain Brett Arthur and extend him for another 10 years for whatever reason, then I think South Sydney will be the front runner to get the services of Wayne next year. I think the Dolphins, as much as they would like to keep him, I think they've already kind of decided that they want to move on, and probably the best thing to do is that. But yeah, the lure of the lifestyle that he's used to is also very strong. But he's also proven that he's, like I said, if the legacy angle is very strong, he might be tempted to come back to Sydney and for one last hurrah. And I think that's the way they should angle it. If you were the Eels, please do that. But anyway, that's my view. But let's now move on to our fifth tackle. We're going to talk about the Bulldogs in our Rugby League Republic rolling report card. Here we go. All right. In this segment, we focus on one club and give our report card on how they're traveling so far this year. So far, we've looked at the Eels, Dolphins, Raiders, Sharks, and Sea Eagles. This week, we're going to look at the Bulldogs and see how they're traveling. I deliberately waited, Tish, for a few weeks because they were going pretty shocking earlier in the year. And now they've turned things around, potentially, seemingly. And I thought this is probably the right time to start looking at whether this is a legit turnaround in form or not. So let's dive into it. So we've got attack is the first thing. So let me just have a, I'm going to bring up the ladder for my own purposes to look at. Let's start with the basics. So they're $51 to win the premiership. They are coming eighth at the moment. They have won all their home games and lost all their away games. So they've been pretty consistent. So 4-4. But they're on 10 points because they've had the bye as well. So probably an artificial thing compared to like the Raiders, who are just behind them as well. Although they're about to have a bye themselves next week. So they're traveling okay. Their attack is not that great, 164, and most of the other teams in the top eight, and some one team, the Cowboys outside of the top eight, have over 200 points. So they're going okay, nothing special, but they do have a plus 25 for and against, so that's something to keep in mind. But look, attack, how do you think they're going with their attack? I've given you the numbers, but in terms of what you've seen, what would you rank them? What would you rate them, sorry?
Yeah, look, I think it's on the improve, but I still think they've got a long way to go when it comes to attack. So I'm gonna, I think it's a pass, because they are 4-4. So it's enough to sort of get themselves in the eight. But I don't think, this team right now will be renowned for attack for maybe a number of years. So I just think that is probably where they're at. They sort of, the games this season, they've sort of scored, I think their biggest number of, 36 points against the Knights seems to be their biggest score this year. Which is, what are we looking at there? So that is kind of, you're kind of looking at six tries there, right? Six tries and six conversions is what they're going to score. So they're going to score three tries on, three tries throughout the whole game. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if you could call that a great team, particularly when you got other teams out there like the Sharks, the Roosters, being able to post 40, 50 plus, sort of thing. So I think a safe thing.
Yeah, I should point out, and maybe I'll talk more about this in momentum. In fact, I'll skip defense for now. We'll talk about defense. I agree. C for attack. Let's talk about defense, and I'll talk about momentum because it's interesting when you look at the way they've played the game this year and the games that they've played. So they've got 139 against, which is quite good, actually.
Yeah.
It's quite good. In fact, if I look at it carefully, you've got the Sharks currently have the best defense at 110. The second best is Storm at 138. The third best, Panthers at 124, Storm at 138, Bulldogs at 139. So they have almost the same kind of defense as the Storm, pretty much. So they're the fourth best defense. And I think that's pretty good. So, look, on the basis of that, that tells me that there is definitely they've done pretty good. So I would say, look, I would say almost an A-. They're in the top echelon of defenses, yeah, which is not something I thought I would say eight, nine games into the season. But that is definitely what we're seeing. It's pretty clear to see, in fact, once you look at their can I just also jump into momentum while we're at it? If we look at the games that they've played, so I'm just going to go through the draw. I think there's a pattern here. So they lost 26-8 against the Eels in round one. They lost 25-6 to the Sharks. They then flogged the Titans, which I guess everyone has, 32-0. Then they lost a close one to the Rabbitohs on Good Friday, 20-16. Since then, they have just edged out the Roosters in a high-scoring game, 30-26. They just lost to the Storm, 16-14. They have flogged the Knights 36-12, and they have beaten the Tigers 22-14. So they've had a mixture of really strong teams and sort of teams that you would expect a top eight team to kind of beat. I think the turnaround, if you're looking at what's happened, it's chalk and cheese, I think, from Good Friday onwards. So I reckon they have really taken the message of Easter as a renewal and a resurrection, because the Bulldogs have definitely resurrected their season. Maybe Cameron Serraldo has gone to a couple of churches or masses and done a few prayers, because I think, to come out after Good Friday and beat the Roosters, or, get close to the Storm, who at that stage were going great guns as well. Pretty good feat. And then since then, they've had some high scoring games and good defense as well. I think that's the other thing to keep in mind, is that while they have been scoring points, they've done well to sort of keep the other teams much lower than they did in the first few games of the season, for sure. So definitely momentum wise, I would say it's all on them. It's 8+ at the moment. They have resurrected their season. So well done to them. If we move to now the depth component, which I guess requires us to look at their squad, they do have a pretty good squad. Let's be real about it. I think, Gus Gould and others have really have done well to kind of recruit. You've got Blake Taff there. There's who else? In the back line, we've got Josh Adokar, Matt Burden, Stephen Crichton. They've got a pretty good squad. The question about depth, though, is what happens when some of those players go missing? And as we saw, they didn't have Kikau for a while there. They've had some problems last year, and they've only just started to hit their groove. And they've hit their groove because everyone's fit now and playing well. So I think depth wise, it's pretty clear that they're at a C in terms of, we've seen evidence of when they haven't had some of their star players, they've just fallen into a heap. And so I think that sort of tells you that the depth isn't that strong compared to maybe other teams. I'll stop there for a second. Tish, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, I think their depth is not as bad as what some other teams have. You've got a player playing, New South Wales Cup in Toby Sexton as a halfback, right? Who's obviously got NRL experience for the Gold Coast, and you've also got like Jake Turpin, right? Who's sort of been in a winning culture at Brisbane. Zane Tetovano, has got Ryan Sutton. So you actually got some pretty good players running around for them in President's Cup, as well as obviously their big, in the Premiership, as you said, Blake Taft has done well. You've got Stephen Crichton and Josh Adokard. It's pretty formidable sort of thing. So I'm prepared to give them, probably at least a B on when it comes to their depth. And I think for the other spots, I think you're perfectly right. I think an A for the defense. I looked at it last year. Last year, they, after eight games, they had conceded 208 points. This year, it's 139, right? So it's a massive difference just over the same same number of games. So, and that's the reason why they're winning, right? Is I don't think it's necessary for their attack. Their attack is kind of slightly improved over last year, but not really by a lot. But their defense has really improved. So I think they're tracking well. And I think, yeah, as you said, the momentum, what you score did you give them momentum? I think it's kind of very middle in the road, right? They sort of, they are.
No, I reckon A plus now. I think they've turned it around.
They've turned it around. Okay. So they've had a bit more, because they've got two wins straight now. So that's pretty good, right? You know, it's difficult to win more than two games in a row. It's the same strike as the Roosters right now. So, you know, that's not bad. And they're going to play the Panthers at Bluebet Stadium.
But my point was more that it's not so much the number of wins. It's more just the fact that they have definitely turned their season around. They were getting flogged initially, and it was all on the cards, Tish, to have Cameron Seraldo potentially being the first coach sacked this year. And I think after Easter, they've just turned it around. And to me, that sort of shows, that's why I put A-plus for momentum, because that is as clear as a turnaround and a comeback as you would ever see. Yes, they haven't won every game. They're not unbeaten since then, but they've given some really good efforts against some top teams where they have lost, which is only really once to the Storm. Let's move on to the strengths and weaknesses. So I think we've sort of covered some of it. The strengths, I think, at the moment are the defense, the momentum. Mm. I think they've also got a winning leaders mentality, I call it. So they've got people like Crichton and Kikau who have been there and done that for Penrith and have that winning mentality. Mm. They know what it takes to win. So they can, and they hold leadership positions within the team, so they can definitely lead the way for the younger players as well. So I think that's a real positive for them. I think they've also got some resources there, you know, having people like Phil Gould, the money that they're throwing towards setting up the system a la Penrith is definitely something that is a positive. And they've got a lot of support as well. I think, you know, having a really vocal home crowd and, you know, really great support locally means that you decide to go to a soulless, empty Accor stadium with 80k capacity, but you can only fit in 20, that your side of the fan base will drown out the others, and that really helps players. So I think there's not to be understated the level of passion within the Bulldogs supporters. And then I think for weaknesses, I do think depth is their weakness. I think potentially I should have put in attack as well. Is definitely a weakness and something that they need to work on, but that can be worked on over the year as there's you know, experienced players get to know each other a bit more. And I think the other issue really is the untested nature of Coach Cameron Seraldo. I think he's still inexperienced. I think we saw last year that he seemed a bit clueless about things. And yes, it's going well for him now, but what happens when they get that first hurdle or a couple of games where they're not winning and questions are going to be asked? I think he's still a bit under pressure, not necessarily to lose his job, but to kind of explain himself a bit more about how, you know, did they make the right selection in him in the first place? So I reckon overall I'm going to give a grade of B. They've definitely got some weaknesses. They've got some strengths. And let's not forget, when all is said and done, they are in the top eight at the moment, which is, you know, that's all they got to do is keep plodding along, keeping up with the top teams, and they are themselves one of the top teams. So if they can do that. Tish, do you have any final comments before we move on to the tips?
Yeah, well, look, I think we could add to, I think I agree with you with their weaknesses, but I think what we could add to their attack, to their positives is charge downs, right? They're leading the comp when it comes to charge downs. So I think that's more comes down to sort of the attitude that they have. Because if you think about the charge down, it is kind of all effort, right? So I think the effort is really there with their squad. And I think that is probably one of their strengths. And I think that's the sort of thing that Cameron Seraldo really is big on, you know, and some of it is even before the courts, you know, what type of effort you sort of give. But I think overall, you can definitely see that they're a team if you're a Bulldogs fan, I don't think you're going to be disappointed if they don't show effort, because I feel like that is what they are probably – that's probably what they want to be known for right now. So, and that's probably why their defense has improved dramatically, right? So yeah, I think good times so far for the Bulldogs fans. And I think, I think potentially they might have a winning season – maybe the bottom half of the top eight. I still don't see the top four material yet, but I think they're definitely on the improve.
Excellent. All right, let's go to our final tackle. Tackle number six, we're going to do the tips for round 10. Here we go. All right, so round 10, after round 9, I got 4 out of 8 and you got 3 out of 8. So that takes me to 36 in total so far this year, and you are on 39. So I'm slowly catching up to you. Let's go to round 10. A lot of great games coming up. We've got firstly the Dolphins versus Manly at Suncorp Stadium. I think on the basis of the venue and the occasion, I think the Dolphins are going to win that one.
Yep, I am going to tip Manly. They are consistently inconsistent and lost last week, so they're going to win this week.
Panthers v Bulldogs, Friday at Bluebet Stadium. I think the Panthers will win this one. I think it'll be close, though.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it will be close, but I think the Panthers have a chance to run away with it late.
Eels versus Broncos, the main Friday game at CommBank Stadium. I'm tipping the Broncos.
Yeah, look, I'm going to tip the Broncos to poor performance last week. They'll probably want to win, get some hearts and minds back in there.
All right. Tigers, at Saturday at 3 p.m., the Tigers are actually going to Tamworth. Tigers, their home game, they're taking to Tamworth. Well done. Against the Knights. I initially tipped the Knights, but I'm actually thinking that the Tigers will turn it around this time.
So yeah, the Knights haven't been playing well. The Knights haven't been playing well, but I think they will beat the Tigers. So I'm going to tip the Knights.
Dragons versus Rabbitohs. Look, both teams are a bit of a shambles at the moment, but I think the Dragons less so. I think there was a bit of an anomaly there at Anzac Day. I think they're going to bounce back. They did well against the Sharks. At one point it looked like they were making a comeback, but it wasn't to be. But I think the Dragons will do a number on the Rabbitohs.
Yeah, look, very interesting game. Can we call this the Ben Hornby Cup? really difficult. Look, I'm going to give it to – I'm just going to give it to the coaching experience of Flanagan at the Dragons as well. Bit hard to tip the Rabbitohs, even though they're, Latrell's back and their lineup is so great, but yeah, how do you see them winning,
Exactly. Saturday, Amy Park, Melbourne Storm versus Cronulla Sharks. This is the top of the table clash. I think it'll be pumping over there. It'll be a big crowd. I think the weather's going to be good. I'm tipping the Sharks. I think normally I would tip the Storm. I think this is the Sharks' opportunity to really stand up. And I'm basing this on the fact that I saw a comment in social media earlier today by, is it Talakai? I think it was Talakai saying something to the effect of, job's not done kind of thing. Like, yeah, we're coming first, equal first or whatever, but this is nothing. We've got to keep going. And I thought that was a really good sign that there is potentially a shift in mentality there, that they're just going to have to knuckle down hard and win these kinds of games against the top teams like the Storm, who are almost impenetrable at home. But I think the Sharks, this is where they step up this year. I'm looking forward to it. That's my tip.
Yeah, I'm going to tip the Storm at home. I have to see the Sharks do it before I'm confident in actually tipping them to do it.
All right. Roosters Warriors at Allianz Stadium, Sunday, 2 p.m. All the signs point to the Roosters continuing their hot form of attacking football. I do think, however, that the Warriors You know, they're a bit underdone this year for some reason. I think they'll bounce back, and I think this is a game where they step up as well. So Warriors for mine.
Yeah, I'm going to tip the Roosters. I think that the Roosters, the Warriors, are just a bit inconsistent for me at the moment. But yeah, but I think the Warriors, I think the they're finding the groove, the Roosters. I definitely feel that. So yeah.
All right, Titans and Cowboys at Cbus Super Stadium, Sunday 4 p.m. game. I'm tipping the Cowboys. I think this will be a clear victory for them. But you never know with the Titans. But yeah, Cowboys for mine.
Yeah, I'm going to tip the Cowboys too. Titans have been playing well without getting the results. But you know what? I'm going to tip it to the Titans. I just realized because the Cowboys are all out attack, but can they defend? I don't think so. But I think the Titans, that they will keep it tight and tight enough to win.
All right. Titans are going to be tight. And the Raiders have their bye. So well done, Ricky Stewart. You get to relax now and actually enjoy your 500 games as coach. Which he'll hate. He'll be just antsy about the next game. But I think this means that they're cruising into the top eight, regardless of results because of the bye. So I think potentially, let's see how it goes. But look, that's it. That's the podcast for today. Thanks so much for listening. And enjoy your footy next week. And please remember, those of you out there with keyboards, don't be Warriors. The only Warriors are the New Zealand Warriors. Be nice, be kind to people. Do not abuse referees or each other. Just chill out, guys, basically.
Yeah.
I think if we all remember that.
Like the Waz, right? Up the Waz for being chill.
Up the Waz. And be like Wayne. Be like Wayne Bennett. I think we just need to – there needs to be a campaign like Be Like Mike. We need to have a – be like Wayne and show footage of him dancing in the Dolphins dressing room after the game. I think that should be the message for rugby league all round this week, with everyone ranting so much and too much anger. Let's get the Wayne Bennett kind of mentality. And with that, I pass over to you, Tish, to wrap things up.
Well, thank you, Dr. T, for listening. I'd like to thank all the listeners for listening to this show. But that's all the time that we have for this edition of the Rugby League Republic. We're your hosts, Tish and Dr. T. Join us next time on the Rugby League Republic. Bye for now.